Good morning, human rights activists all over the world. Welcome back to Communication Workers of America, CWA, Human Rights, Our Power, a justice field hour of talk, solidarity, and worker power right here on KYOK 1140 AM in the all new 106.5 FM. If you are visiting the beautiful city of Houston, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Listening to us every Thursday morning, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Pacific on kyokradio.org or the CWA Strong app or your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, and Podchaser. Search for the CWA Hour of Power on your favorite player. Thank you for joining us on the CWA Human Rights Hour Power Radio Show this morning. It's about us. That's right. It's about us. Working agreement, solidarity, living wages, worker power, and simply human rights. Honk your horns if you support workers. We have a phenomenal show lineup for you this morning. Sir Reginald Small, Tay Atkins is here today with you. The other two have fallen out sick, so they say, but we wish them well and we're praying for them. Tune in this morning. We're going to have an open discussion on poverty in America. We're going to talk about National Poverty in America Awareness Month, the unhoused of America. And of course, we always are going to bring you Tea with Tay. And if we have time, we may try even to get to a Union Buster or Our Power trivia. But I believe what we're going to be talking about today is going to take up all of our time because we also are going to be dealing with the Union Garment Campaign. So don't you dare touch that dial. Stay right here with us. Our union voices are ringing in every district from Alaska to Maine, Texas to Minnesota, Canada to Puerto Rico, because we don't play at CWA. I need to bring a very important announcement to you this morning because we have our union brothers and sisters and siblings in District 9, which is in California, which has been affected by the Los Angeles fires. You can help CWA members and retirees that have been devastated by California wildfires by going over to cwa.org/CA-wildfires. You can donate at this website, and every dime that you give goes to CWA members and retirees. That's in District 9, which is affecting Los Angeles with the Los Angeles fires. Let me give that to you one more time, cwa.org/CA-wildfires. Our union brothers, sisters, and siblings at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette have been outside striking for 26 months on the picket lines. And yet, while they're out striking, they're still churning out the news with facts for you and me. And let's show our support to them by making sure we subscribe to their free publication at unionprogress.com. I just heard someone say, when we fight, we win. That is correct. You're tuned in to KYOK 1140 AM at the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Today, we celebrate the extraordinary life of a man whose legacy will forever be etched into the fabric of the civil rights movement, Jose Chacha Jimenez. As we reflect on his 76 years of life, we honor not just the man, but his profound impact on his community, his people, and the world. Chacha was more than a leader. He was a revolutionary spirit who stood firm against injustice and tirelessly worked to liberate marginalized people. Born in Puerto Rico on August 8, 1948, his life's journey took him from the streets of Chicago to the forefront of a movement that demanded dignity, equality, and self-determination for Puerto Ricans and oppressed people everywhere. Chacha's story begins in Lincoln Park, one of Chicago's most impoverished neighborhoods during the 1960s. It was there, amid poverty, systemic racism, and displacement, that he recognized the need for action. What started out as a street gang transformed under his leadership into the Young Lords Organization, a political and community-based group that became a beacon of hope and a model of activism. The Young Lords, inspired by the Black Panther Party, became a force for change. Cha-Cha and his fellow Lords fought for healthcare access, affordable housing, education, and employment. They demanded an end to police brutality, U.S. imperialism, and the militarization, of Puerto Rico. They understood that the fight for justice was not just about addressing immediate needs, but about challenging the systems that perpetuated inequality. Under Cha-Cha's leadership, the Young Lords established programs that directly addressed their community needs, free medical clinics, free breakfast for children, and cultural centers that celebrated and persevered Puerto Rican heritage. These programs didn't just fill gaps in the system, they laid the groundwork for federal programs such as the Children's Nutrition Initiatives we see today. Cha-Cha's vision was not limited to Puerto Ricans alone. It championed a multi-ethnic coalition of Black, Latino, and white allies, believing that unity was the key to overcoming poverty and discrimination. This vision led to the Young Lords joining the Rainbow Coalition in 1969, a groundbreaking alliance led by the Black Panther Party that united diverse groups to tackle shared struggles. It was an alliance that shocked the establishment and showed the power of solidarity. His friendship with Fred Hampton, the charismatic Black Panther leader, was a defining moment in Cha-Cha's life. Fred inspired him to move away from the gang mentality and embrace the possibilities of organized activism. Together, they dreamed of a better world, a world where oppressed people of all backgrounds could stand together and demand justice. Cha-Cha's leadership extended beyond grassroots organizations also. In 1974, he became the first Latino to run for alderman in Chicago, challenging the gentrification plans of Mayor Richard J. Daley and asserting the political power of the Puerto Rican and Latino communities. He didn't win, but his campaign attracted over 1,500 supporters and reshaped Chicago's political landscape. Nearly a decade later, he helped form the first Latino coalition for Harold Washington's historical mayoral campaign, mobilizing voters to elect Chicago's first Black mayor. Through it all, Cha-Cha remained committed to preserving the history and legacy of the Young Lords. In 1995, he partnered with DePaul University's Center for Latino Research to create the Lincoln Park Project, ensuring that the story of the Young Lords and their revolutionary spirit would inspire generations to come. But Cha-Cha was not just a leader. He was a son, a brother, a father, and a friend. He carried with him the love of his family and the pride of his heritage. Though his fight was often against powerful systems, he never lost sight of the people he fought for. His children, Jacqueline, Sonia, Melissa, Alejandro, and Jaretta, his sisters, Jenny, Marina, and Daisy, and his entire Puerto Rican community. As we say goodbye to Cha-Cha, let us not mourn his passing, but celebrate his life and the profound legacy he leaves behind. His vision of justice, equality, and unity is a call to action for all of us. It reminds us that fight for civil rights is ongoing, that we must continue to challenge oppression, and that the power of the people can never be underestimated. Cha-Cha's final resting place will be in Puerto Rico alongside his beautiful mother, but his spirit will forever remain with all of us. He touched in the streets of Lincoln Park, in the hearts of those he inspired, and in the justice movements that he helped ignite. While there aren't many quotes from Cha-Cha available online, I believe a hypothetical quote could be, "The fight against poverty is a fight for justice. It's about more than just money. It's about power, equality, and the right to live with dignity." Let us honor him not just with words, but with actions. Let us carry forward the revolutionary spirit of Cha-Cha and the Young Lords. Let us commit ourselves to building a world that reflects the values he fought for, a world of equality, dignity, and freedom for all. Rest in power, Cha-Cha. Your fight is not over. We will carry the torch. You're tuned into KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Listen and subscribe to us on your favorite podcast player, CWA Strong app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, Podchaser. Search for CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. Up next, we have Jeeva Mohill in the Garment Campaign Organizer at the Global Labor Justice International Labor Rights Forum. In this role, she collaborates on transitional labor rights campaigns with GLJ Core Garment Supply Chain Partners. Jeeva is dedicated to fostering strong partnerships between unions and grassroots workers organizations in the U.S. and the Garment Workers Union in the Global South, emphasizing shared values and mutual interests. Good morning and welcome, Jeeva. How are you this morning? We're so glad to have you this morning.
Thank you. This is my second time on the podcast. I'm really excited to be here.
And we're glad to have you. And we can always, you can always come anytime you want to, because you bring a wealth of information to us. And this morning, we're talking about the Union Garment Campaign, something that you're so passionate about. And I know Tay has already worked, has been on the campaign with you. So I'm going to let you guys just take it away and talk all about that.
Yeah, CWA has really been with us from the beginning, from TIMIA and the Women's Caucus hosting a National Day of Action with us in solidarity with garment workers, to Tay participating in actions in July. Y'all have always really stood by us, and we really, really appreciate that partnership and solidarity. But this campaign is actually called the Fight the Heist campaign. It came out of 2020 when, like a lot of industries, we saw garment workers take major losses, experience a lot of wage theft. They weren't paid for hours worked. They weren't paid legally required severance after brands canceled their orders from supplier factories. So basically, in the garment supply chain, brands contract with factories. Those factories directly employ the workers. And so when brands canceled their orders, those factories pushed all of the losses down onto the workers, even though the brands emerged with record profits. And the vast majority of garment supply chain workers are younger women under 30. The vast majority of them are internal migrants because you move to the factory area. And the vast majority of them are breadwinners for large families. And so in 2020, we saw Nike, a company that is really the architect of one of our most unequal supply chains in the entire world, kind of prove why it's our biggest enemy, because as workers lost income and went into debt, as people lost their houses and went down to one meal a day, Nike turned around and made record profits in 2020 and 2021, and then paid out that money to wealthy shareholders instead of the workers who made that success possible. And that's something we saw in a lot of different industries. We were actually on a forum with CWA and Workers United about it, because this is a common practice of companies choosing to pay out their major shareholders through stock, something called stock buybacks, instead of workers.
Jeeva, how many other unions are active in this campaign with you all?
Mm-hmm. So our coalition's over 20 unions from six different garment producing countries. And we've had more join on the U.S. ally side. We have several different committees in different key areas. So TIMIA has connected us to incredible CWA organizers in Phoenix, who really came out for us in July, along with Tay specifically. We have a regional solidarity committee in New York, in DC, in Boston, and in Chicago as well.
And what are your demands in this campaign? What are you trying to change?
So our key demand is that Nike negotiate a path to a living wage and human rights protections for workers in its supply chain, and that they negotiate directly with the unions covering workers in their supply chain, which would be the first time that Nike has ever acknowledged they have they are an employer for these workers and they have a responsibility to them. This is really revolutionary. Nike's model really depends on making workers invisible to their consumers, right? They're Phil Knight, who's the founder of Nike. He actually wrote about outsourcing to Asia to save money in his college papers before he even started the company. And so even as we see Nike now taking some really progressive positions and like hiring really amazing spokespeople, we've also seen that Nike has built one of the most unequal supply chains in the world, and wherein like a Sri Lankan garment worker makes about $100 a month. It would take them 24,000 years to make 1 year of the previous Nike CEO's salary.
Jiva,
And
how, sorry, I just wanted to ask you, how can people support the campaign? What can people do to help right now?
So there's two major ways, right? If you're interested in getting more deeply involved with the campaign, you can reach out to me at Global Labor Justice and we can talk about setting up a meeting between one of the worker leaders on our international garment committees and the membership of your union or worker organization. But right now, the best way that you can support is by taking a pledge to share our upcoming photo petition. So, just to give you a little bit of background, we have rank and file committees of current garment workers in several countries. Those folks have been doing these giant Zoom calls in like five different languages. They've been doing organizing with their coworkers, been holding trainings for their membership to get workers to agree to publicly come forward for the first time. Common knowledge has always been that, or common wisdom has always been, it's too dangerous as a current garment worker to show your face publicly. So these workers are going to be taking a major risk. And our union partners in Asia have successfully signed up over 1,000 workers to publicly come forward. We'll be releasing that photo on March 21st. And our core ask for allies is to pledge to share the photo. We want to make sure that as our on the US side, we're doing everything possible to make sure that the workers' photo is in front of the Nike executives who need to see that. And so in the link at the episode, there's going to be a link to the pledge form. So what people can do is fill out the pledge form. It's just we'll ask for your information and which social media platforms you'd be willing to share on. And then you'll get a reminder of when the photo is going to be ready to go out, along with the toolkit to share and the direct people to tag in that.
Things that I want you guys to share with the listening audience is the action that got you guys put out. Can you set the background for us that for that take?
So of course we stand with Nike garment workers or garment workers. When they're under attack, we're under attack. So there was a call to action. Well, I was in another state at the time, but I called down to Arizona and I worked with CWA Local 7019 and I got my organizer. We're gonna shout her out, Erin Ruffin. I got her on the line and I went, we need to do something. She said, okay, Tay. Before I even got out of the meeting I was in, she had people ready to go. She was like, you said that we're gonna all be off of work that day. We're gonna make it happen. I was like, okay. By the time that I returned to Arizona, My committee, our committee, the Human Rights Committee, had members ready. We knew we were going into the mall. We went into a mall down here called Arizona Mills. It's a very popular mall. And we went and we talked to people outside of the Nike store, which of course did not make them happy, but we were dedicated. We were stopping people. People were unaware of what was even going on. People were saying, my family works in this country. Like it was a really good thing. And I think they put us out within 30 minutes. They didn't want us to have any signs or anything anymore. And again, like I said, we're definitely for standing up against injustice, no matter who or what. We know that it may not affect us now, but it'll affect us later. So we did go put our signs back up, but we went back into the mall with our red shirts on, and we basically went to get some ice cream because we wanted them to know that we were still there. So it was a really good day, and I felt great about what we did because them telling us to leave the mall, that meant nothing to me. The people who stood there and said, "We didn't know these things were going up." People would walk by Nike and like they were going in, and we'd talk to them, and they'd be like, "Let me read this first," and go around. So it felt good. Like, we're going to educate you about this store that you are spending your money in.
Right. As we're about to close this particular piece up, this segment. Jiva, do you have any parting words for our listening audience?
Yeah, I think I just want to say to folks that this has been a brutal week for a lot of people in the US labor movement and beyond. I think this campaign is a lot of hope because these are workers getting together across borders to challenge one of the biggest garment companies in the world and getting together in ways that have not been at a scale that hasn't been seen before. And I would like to say again to folks, please fill out the pledge form so that we can make sure that when those workers take a risk, when those over 1,000 workers take that risk to show their faces, that it means as much as it possibly can. So I want to thank everybody again. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you so much, Jiva Moore, here with Global Labor Justice Initiative and the Union Garment Campaign. Thank you so much, and watch our Facebook page, and we will have more information for you. You're listening to CWA Hour Power Hour on KYK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org, on our CWA Strong app, or your favorite podcast player. CWA Strong app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, and Podchaser. Search for CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. Up next, we have, guess who, everybody? Sir Reginald Small is back in the spotlight seat this morning. Good morning, Sir Reginald Small.
And a good morning to you, Errol Minor, and good morning to our KYOK radio listeners. I am and I remain Reginald Small, Civil Rights Own Equity Chairperson for CWA. And this morning, for our listeners, I would like to acknowledge the passing of a great union leader right here in Dallas, Texas, Mr. J.D. Williams. J.D. Williams was born December of 1946, and he passed away on Monday, January 20th. Just a little about J.D. Williams. J.D. Williams, he was a quiet man who came to his greatest hours during the affirmative action period. That was a clamoring for change and diversity in the corporate world, and organized labor was no different. J.D. Williams found a way to fuse the talents of people of all races, genders, and gender preferences. J.D. Williams backed candidates at CWA and throughout unions within the region who were best for the job while ensuring that women would be respected as equals. He never shied away from issues of race. J.D. Williams not only won the respect of his peers locally, but statewide and nationally. He was known and well trusted by elected officials who understood the needs of working people and the need for collective bargaining rights. JD was the type of servant leader who made personal sacrifices for his people and party. Even in retirement, he was known as a trusted strategist and confidant to union leaders and workers around the country. A. Philip Randolph, a noted trade unionist, once said, "It's easy to get people's attention. What counts is getting their interest." JD was always a soft-spoken man who deflected personal notoriety, but he knew how to win the working person's attention. In addition to serving CWA Local 6215 in many elected capacities, including president from 1987 to 2009, he was an organizer, a leader, and a friend to the labor movement. He passed away peacefully on Monday, January 20th, 2025. He has fought the good fight, and his legacy will live on. Our sincerest sympathies are with him, with his family, his friends, and his union during this difficult time. Funeral services will take place on Wednesday, January 29th, in Dallas, Texas, at Laurel Land Funeral Home at 2 o'clock. Now, we have a special guest back in the studio with us this morning, Mr. Kwame Barnes. He is no stranger to us. Kwame comes from Local 4603, where he serves as Secretary Treasurer. Kwame is representing District 4 on the Civil Rights and on Equity Committee for the National CWA. And we welcome Kwame back this morning. He is a passionate activist dedicated to addressing homelessness in America. His commitment is especially significant during Poverty Awareness Month. This is a time when we reflect on the impact of poverty and its correlation with homelessness. Throughout his advocacy, Kwame raises awareness about the issues faced by those experiencing homelessness and highlights the importance of community support and systemic solutions. I personally am very excited to have Kwame coming back to us this morning to discuss this topic because as we travel to and fro, and even just from work, any city that we travel to nowadays, you see that there is a situation. I don't want to call it a problem, but a situation concerning homelessness. And like in all things that we have going on now, everyone has an opinion on it, but very little action. And on this particular committee that Kwame sits, we are about looking at the situation, gaining awareness around it, but we also want to take action. So, Kwame, I give you the mic this morning, Kwame, to come in your own way to discuss this very, very important topic. Welcome.
Thank you. And thank you for inviting me back to the show. Feels good to be back home where we can get information out about needs that we need to meet within our local communities and within our nation today and the problems that we face every day. And today I want to talk about homelessness and how I got involved with participating in the work of serving the homeless. I started off by joining the Poor People's Campaign through CWA and through that movement and working with Reverend Barber and his crew and his staff. And most of his staff are people that are actually affected by homelessness, joblessness, hunger, etc. And most of those people are advocates for themselves. And you find that most of those people are people like me and you, day-to-day people. And a lot of us that are employed right now, some of us are a couple of check paychecks away from being homeless. And it's a sad time to be in, especially when our nation is one of the richest nations, is actually the richest nation in the world. And I think the richest nation that has ever lived. So we don't have to deal with homelessness or poverty when we can actually make a change. So that's the reason why, one of the reasons why I got involved. I also volunteered through the Civil Rights Committee by helping out the guest house here in Milwaukee, where we feed homeless people, and St. Ben's Church, where we feed homeless people. And I started to recognize that I actually know some of the people who are affected by homelessness. So with that being said, I just want to talk a little bit about what we're facing. Homelessness remains a persistent and complex issue in the United States, affecting individuals and families across the nation. Despite efforts to address the problem, a number of people experiencing homelessness has been on the rise. This report aims to provide an overview of homelessness in the U.S., including its scope, causes, and potential solutions. Increasing numbers in 2023, according to HUD, an estimated 653,104 people experienced homelessness in the U.S., a 12% increase from the previous year. This represents the highest number recorded since 2007. Unsheltered homelessness, a significant portion of the homeless population, approximately 256,610 people are unsheltered, meaning they reside in places not meant for human habitation, such as streets, parks, or abandoned buildings. The demographic disparities are homelessness disproportionately affects certain populations, including racial and ethnic minorities, veterans, and individuals with disabilities or mental health issues. Some of the causes of homelessness are a lack of affordable housing. A primary driver of homelessness is a severe shortage of affordable housing, rising rent, stagnant wages that make it increasingly difficult for low-income individuals and families to secure stable housing. Some of the economic factors we can talk about are job loss, poverty, and the lack of access to economic opportunities to create to contrib that contribute to homelessness. We also have issues like mental health, substance abuse, and chronic conditions that can lead to an exacerbated homelessness. We also deal with systemic issues, systemic racism, discrimination, and lack of access to healthcare, and social services also play a role. Some of the potential solutions are increase in affordable, we need to increase affordable housing by expanding the availability for affordable housing through government subsidies, incentives for developers, and zoning reforms are crucial. We would also like to address the economic inequality. We need to deal with policies that promote living wages, job training, and access to employment opportunities can help prevent homelessness. We are also looking to provide support services such as case management, counseling, and assistance with obtaining benefits that can help individuals experience homelessness transition to stable housing. We also want to look at preventative strategies to prevent homelessness. Invest in a prevention program that address the root causes of homelessness, such as early intervention for at-risk families and youth, can help reduce the number of people who become homeless that become homeless. In conclusion, I would like to say that homelessness in the United States is a complex issue with no single solution. Addressing this crisis requires a multifaceted approach that includes increasing affordable housing, addressing economic inequality, improving access to healthcare and support services, and implementing prevention strategies. By working together, we can create a society where everyone has a safe and stable place to call home. Again, or we talked about I talked earlier about the United States being one of the richest countries in the world. There is no need for anyone to be unhoused in this day and age. There are multiple bills that can be passed to address this, and there is no one bill that can address this, but this has to be multiple bills to address the situation of homelessness. But the way that CWA can participate in helping out the homeless is by joining your National Poor People's Campaign. Volunteer at houses or community places that support homeless people. The shelters here that I've been with, as far as the guest house, they provide shelter for homeless men and women and children. They also provide clothing during the winter season, and during the winters here are brutal. So seeing people being unhoused here is very emotional, and it's something that can't be ignored, and it's something that everybody should participate in bringing about change or assistance to our brothers and sisters who are out living in the streets. But thank you for the opportunity for giving me a chance to talk about this epidemic, because it is an epidemic, because the more and more rent increases are happening and the pushing out of people out of their own communities, more and more people are being unhoused, and it's becoming an epidemic. So thank you again for bringing me on the show to talk about this important issue.
That is, thank you for coming on the show today to talk about these very important issues. I mean, that one report is just packed with so much information to think about. I mean, you're talking about 250,000 people that are unsheltered. That's a lot of people, and I'm sure that's under what the true number is. But that's a lot of people. That should get our attention. You gave us an ask. We can join the Poor People's Campaign. We can volunteer in shelters. And one thing that stood out the most with me is that you pointed out there is not one reason. There are many reasons that homelessness is still a concern and an issue in our nation today. When we think about homelessness, there was a time that you would hear about it in political campaigns from either side, that it was a big deal. I don't remember hearing that during this political season very much about homelessness, and it is more and more in our face every single day. It looks like the thing that comes to mind for me is meeting the needs of the people suffering with this homelessness issue, and not making general assumptions on as to why they're homeless. We need to get away from the why, unless we're getting ready to fix the why. We need to get away from that and actually meet the needs of the people. Kwame, you have brought so much to our show today with information. Is there anything else you want to add or make a plea for the listeners?
Well, I mean, the point that when you touched on the stigma that exists around homelessness, a lot of people do believe that these people gave up on life, or that they were addicts, or that they chose to, live out in the streets. And that's just not the case. Again, these are people like me and you, and all of the brothers and sisters who are listening today, all of our siblings that are used to listening today. You'll be surprised that the people who are actually working day to day, going to work every single day, but still can't afford to have a place to live or a place to eat, and having a home and having something to eat is about dignity, and for anybody to judge why somebody is homeless is just crazy nowadays, because it can come from any, we're a couple of paychecks away from, being out on the street, some of us are, and that's, we have to be aware of that to want to participate in bringing about a change so that we don't have to be affected by that. But because one of us are affected, we all are affected. And because of that, we all need to do something to make a change. So thank you.
And we also, Kwame, there's another subject with homelessness that we don't talk about is the working homeless. And some of these metropolitan cities where the cost of living is already high and growing higher, where people are actually going to work and not making a fair living wages, which is why one of the great things about trying to unionize people and organize is so that we can try to fight for them to have a fair living wage. So that's a growing thing. I was visiting some city, and I don't want to put a name on it, but visiting a city where the people, they have an 8 hour a day job, but they just absolutely still cannot afford to pay rent. That's a travesty in this United States of America
Well,
today.
here in our city, I was watching the news a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about the increasing rent hikes, cost of living, increasing rent hikes, and then they went from that to, because it can go unchecked because there are no bills that say that landlords can't raise their prices or they don't put a cap on rent. So that means that landlords can choose to keep increasing their rent, increasing their rent, and if you're only making a wage that's stagnated and you're not increasing your wages, you can't meet that need month to month. And if you have children and you're trying to eat, and you have other health care issues that you're trying to address, you just can't afford, a lot of people can't afford to live where rent is being unchecked. They went from that segment to a segment where people were living in parks. We have some places here where people are living under bridges and they're living under parks in tents, and that's where they have to stay. But you find that some people are just not caring enough, and they don't want to see that because it's a reality that, some people can choose not to deal with. Unfortunately, it's a reality that we need to address and correct in our nation, opposed to just pushing it aside or ignoring it. We've seen that happen when it comes down to racial disparities, our issues with our LGBTQIA people. The more you try to push people or ignore people away, the more hurt, the more pushed down people feel. And that's not the way that, CWA feels about one another. You know, we are a people who are about lifting up one another. And like I said before, if one of us is down, then we're all down. So we must all pull each other up, no matter what background we come from, to be able to have dignity and livable wages today.
And
Thank you.
since you all are talking about this, we can just keep it right here because the conversation is flowing, and we have already went into a portion where of Tea with Tay. So since this is going just perfectly right now, go ahead, Tay. Let's just jump right on into it because you and I had already discussed about rent wages, rent. Where some companies are charging three times the rent in some areas, and then now they have moved up to five times the rent. So let's just pick it up right there.
All right, and good morning, KYOK listeners. Again, this is Tay. So we are definitely going to get into this discussion because we have to make sense, okay? So let's talk about it. Families' wages are anywhere between $26,000, $27,000, to $60,000 for a single individual. So if rent is about $1,600 a month and they're charging five times that as far as rent, the math does not math. And I'm gonna tell you, I'm not a numbers girl, but I know when something doesn't look right. So if we're making barely $60,000 a year, how are you charging someone? How are you looking for someone to show proof of $90,000 a year to live somewhere? That doesn't even make sense. So that is something me and Errol, we've talked about. We were looking at it. And then this doesn't go into the fact that you also have to be able to afford insurance, food, gas to get to work. So all of these things, they contribute to poverty in America. So when we talk about poverty in America, sometimes people automatically think, oh, this person doesn't have a job. That's something that we have to get out of. That's a stereotype that hurts people. Because normally people who live in poverty, they are working, and sometimes they're overworking to survive. Marginalized communities are affected mostly by poverty. So it's a systematic discrimination. Barriers often leave certain areas in higher poverty rates, like than the general population, like racial minorities and Indigenous people, the LGBTQIA plus individuals, and people with disabilities as well. So when you think about poverty, that does not mean that someone is not working. It means that they cannot afford to live in America. So poverty impacts healthcare, nutrition, developmental growth, inadequate school resources, proper mental health support, and believe it or not, it contributes to mass incarceration. And when we get into this, I'm just going to say, when I say contributes to mass incarceration, I think that if we are talking about people who need a livable wage and they're willing to work, we've had a lot of changes here recently. I think that one of the things we should actually be looking into is taking that felon box off of job applications. If people have corrected their lifestyles and they're able to do think I don't want to get too much into it, but I think that's one of the things that needs to be taken off of job applications as well, is because America has proven that that should matter, right? We are
Right.
trying to give people a livable wage. We are trying to lift people out of poverty, and I think that we should be looking at it from all corners. All
Man,
corners.
the tea with Tay this morning is being poured and it is hot. I want to go back to something, Tay, because one thing that we had talked about was, and we have been passionate about at CWA, is the fight for 15. And when we were doing the research, assuming a 40-hour work week, when you look at the demographics of that, are the wages, and you're saying somebody's making $14.42 an hour, that's only $576 a week, $2,500 a month. And so someone that has to pay rent three times that a month, they can only afford a place for $833 a month. And then if they go up to five times, they can only get a place for $500 a month. And as of January 2025, the average rent for an apartment in the United States, you guys know how much it was?
What was it?
According to apartments.com, it was $1,554 a month. So what are we going to do? Go and sell blood or blood plasma or something? And you're only making for you. We have to make sure that we are sending individuals to Senate houses, state houses that have our best interests, that have our constituents' interests. And you work absolutely correct, Reginald, that there are a lot of working poor out here.
I think Errol, and I don't know, this is so much information, but I think that we are looking at a two-sided coin. When you start talking about legislation and so forth and what we're sending, you're talking two-sided. The property prices are rising. So you have the renter and then you have the landlord. And the reason that I think that we're not gaining much leverage in the legislation is that we're not looking at the compromise in it. I always like to see both sides of the spectrum, look at the truth and deal with the facts. The taxes are going up so high in these cities that the landlord is forced to increase the rent in order to break even, actually, in some cases. The insurance needs to be dealt with nationally, especially in any state that's a coastal state or that deals with hurricanes or fire devastation. The insurance on the rental properties are so high that it's causing the prices to go up. So this is like a domino effect. It's not a one-sided issue. There needs to be something dealt with. It's just, I don't know, this tree has so many branches. I don't know where to start cutting, but I do know that everyone deserves a decent place to live.
Yes.
That I think we can all agree on.
You you're absolutely correct. Go ahead, Tay.
No, I was just gonna say you're correct, Reginald. You're absolutely correct. Everyone deserves to be able to go somewhere and be warm at night. Everyone deserves to be able to go somewhere and know that they're safe and they can feel comfortable. And even if it's a little room, that this is my space and I don't have to be out in the rain. One of the most disheartening things that I've ever seen is when I'm just gonna say it. When I was in Austin, Texas, it was raining. I seen someone cuddled up with their umbrella in a little space trying to shield themselves for the rain, from the rain. All I could think to myself as I walked by is there's no way that everyone is walking by and no one has yet felt what I feel in my heart. Like there's no way. That is so disheartening. And we are, again, we have money to spend clearly here in America. And I think that we should do a lot more for the unhoused. Sometimes it's not about ego. It's about humanity. Like I said, that was one of the most disheartening things I've ever seen. Is I don't know how this is even happening as much as it's happening.
I want to drop a pin right here, and I'm going to come to you, Kwame. I want to drop this little pin right here and see if we can circle back to it, because Dr. William Barber is always talking about critical issues of healthcare access in America. And in America, there are a lot of healthcare poor. That's what I call it. But Kwame, you said something very important, and that is thinking about the LA fires and what the people in California are going through right now. Just think about what's going to happen, Reggie, with taxes and rebuilding LA, and their land prices are already astronomical.
I can't even get my mind around that. That devastation is still so ongoing that I don't think that we can even fully wrap our arms around what the outcome of that is going to be. But I can assure you that we will all reap the impacts of that financially in some kind of way.
Yes, and Jiva said something also. She sent me a little chat message, and let's not even forget about the people in North Carolina that had all of the flooding and the hurricanes. So this is going to be affecting everyone for a long time. And I don't know about you guys, but we're already paying astronomical prices in insurance, and I know for sure they're going to pass that all over the world, all over the United States, to offset insurance prices as well. But let me go back to, because we're already running out of time. It's already 10:53 a.m., 11:53 Eastern time. Dr. William Barber of the Poor People's Campaign has emphasized the critical issue of healthcare access in America, the healthcare, the poor. And he points out that approximately 37 million people lack health insurance. And Dr. Barber highlights the severe consequences of this issue, stating that for every 1 million individuals without health care, over 5,000 people die each year due to the unavailability of essential medical services. And with the United States being one of the 25 wealthiest countries, why is it even to today we don't have universal health care?
Oh, Errol, you trying to get us to talk 30 more minutes on that one.
These are issues that we deal with, and I am so glad that we are in a union, a part of a union that fights for these issues.
Errol, when we talk about health care, not having health care and people who are struggling to pay for health care but still don't want to go to the doctor because they have a copay that's it's higher than the insurance sometimes. It is ridiculous the way that health care is set up here. People will rather skip medication that is life-saving than to spend $1,000 or whatever that may be for a copay. I had someone just recently say they had to go through a medical issue, but their copay was $3,000, but they're paying insurance. They've been paying for insurance. It doesn't make sense. It does not make sense.
You're absolutely correct. And we are grateful to work and be in a union that addresses poverty. We advocate for living wages, protecting workers' rights, closing equity gaps, supporting legislation that benefits individuals' labor contracts as well, and we bridge the digital divide. The CWA focuses on these critical areas, and we thank Kwame Barnes as well as Jiba Mohill for being with us this morning on the CWA Hour of Power. T for Tay, poverty in America. Oh, wow, we can keep this going. And I think we may need to pick this back up on next week. What do you guys say about that?
We got a lot to talk about.
We do have a lot to talk about. You have been listening to KYOK 1140 AM and the all new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org or the CWA Strong app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, and Podchaser. As we come down to the final moments of the show, we want to always remember our sisters, brothers, and siblings at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. January is National Human Trafficking Month, Slavery and Poverty in America Awareness Month, and we must take action and learn more today. When you take time to learn about others around you, you make the world a better place. Awareness campaigns serve as a powerful reminder that there are steps we all must take in looking out for loved ones, the people in our community, and those who have been impacted. It's time to take one big step together and make a change. An hour is not long enough to be with you, and a week is too long to be away from you. You have been tuned into the CWA Human Rights Justice Hour Power broadcast. I hope something you heard today has inspired you to take action toward creating positive change in the world. Every person has the power to make a difference, no matter how small. And by working together, we can create a world where human rights are respected and valued. So I encourage each of you in the listening audience to reflect on your role in promoting human rights to effect change in your communities and beyond. Know that you are not alone in your quest for a more just and equitable world. When faced with injustice, it can be easy to lose hope and give up. But remember, justice may be slow like the truth, but when it finally comes, it will stand. Until next Thursday, 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, and 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on KYOK 1140 a.m. and the all-new 106.5 FM. See you next Thursday.